Hello, everybody. This is Jordan. Before we get to our World Series mega preview show, just wanted to drop in with a quick note. We recorded our big Dodgers-Yankees World Series preview earlier on Tuesday afternoon. Of course, on Tuesday evening, we got the very sad news of the passing of a true Dodgers legend, Fernando Valenzuela, at the age of 63. So I just wanted to hop on here before we get into our preview and then just acknowledge that and just say a couple words about this and the timing of it. Of course, I can't begin to capture the essence of a player with this kind of legacy with a few quick words here. But I mean, this is someone, again, the timing is pretty staggering. For the second time this year, of course, earlier this year, we lost Willie Mays shortly before the Rickwood Classic. Now the passing of Fernando Valenzuela, someone who, of course, his breakout season, one of the most iconic single seasons in baseball history, 1981 Rookie of the Year, Cy Young as a 20-year-old. That's also a year where he pitched and won a game in the World Series against the Yankees, the last time the Dodgers and Yankees played in the World Series. So it's obviously not something we're going to mention when you hear us previewing this World Series later on in this episode, but it is pretty remarkable timing, and I'm sure there will be a lot of tributes to him and his career and his legacy. Of course, the greatest Mexican baseball player of all time. That is a huge part of his legacy and how he impacted so many and inspired so many during his career and after his career. Of course, he's been a part of the Dodgers Spanish radio broadcast for I think over 20 years, and had announced earlier this month, I should say that he'd be stepping away to focus on his health. And now, of course, we get this very sad news of his passing at age 63. So a lot more, of course, we will be talking about Valenzuela, and I'm looking forward to seeing how the Dodgers and MLB chooses to honor him. I'm flying to LA in a matter of hours at this point. So looking forward to being out there and learning more about him and his career. But yeah, I'll just say the last thing I'll say about this is, you think about players from previous generations who someone my age, who I just think like how cool it would be to go watch at their peak and everything that comes with it. This is on the very short list for Fernando Valenzuela in 1981. So I'm sure a lot of people feel that way. And I'd love to, Eddie, if someone is old enough to remember what it was like and listens to the show, I'd love to hear your memories. And if he means anything to you particularly, you can, of course, email us at baseballbarbercast@gmail.com. But just wanted to give that note before we get into the show, just to acknowledge it, because it is obviously big news and very relevant to the events and the teams involved. But with that, I will get out of the way, and hopefully you enjoy this World Series preview, the Dodgers and the Yankees.
Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbercast, the only baseball podcast in the world who wishes that the World Series was Diamondbacks Rangers. I'm Jake Mitz, that's George Schusterman, and I'm just pulling your leg. Let's do the gauntlet.
I miss Ketel Marte a little bit, just a little bit. Not enough to make me want to rewind and do last year's World Series all over again. Adolis Garcia was really doing a lot of the heavy lifting from an entertainment standpoint last year. But no, Jake, my dear friend, there will be no shortage of things to look forward to in this one as the Yankees and Dodgers will square off on Friday. We will both be there, of course, for all the games in this series, whether it's 4, 5, 6, or 7, 8, 9. Let's just keep going, baby. Let's just play these teams to keep playing until the winter meetings. I would enjoy that. I don't think Scott Boras would enjoy that, but I would certainly enjoy that. This is our World Series preview episode. I am not in Los Angeles yet, but I will be on Wednesday. And we have a lot to get to. And as you know, if you've been listening to this podcast as we previewed each series, we, of course, preview the offense and the bullpen and rotation. But we always begin with that narrative machine. Ka-chunk, ka-chunk. Not choo-choo or whatever other sounds Jake's was making. But truly, that bit, as goofy and lazy as it is, was all leading up to this moment because we could basically just go narratives for the next hour. But we're going to try and keep this organized. So, Jake, where would you like to start? Because this is kind of overwhelming. We need more sounds than we could ever even procure or producer Andrew Hartz could produce with some sort of, you know, producer soundboard.
Narrative production is at an all-time high. The machines are cranking out narratives at a rate that is so good for the narrative economy, because Yankees Dodgers provides us with enough narratives for the next 100 years. And I think we should just begin. These are the biggest teams. These are the two biggest teams. These are the teams that the most people care about, right? Now, is there a significant segment of the American baseball-loving population that is, you know, rolling their eyes and less than enthused having to root for one of these two teams? Surely, yes, I understand that. There are more people that hate these teams than love these teams, which was not the case with Diamondbacks Rangers. Okay.
Yeah.
However, they each play in a particularly large metropolis, and therefore there are a lot of people who live and breathe with the Yankees and the Dodgers. And from a neutral perspective, while that is exhausting, and there are like eye-rolly elements of both of these teams in their fan bases, the sheer might of this is going to be incredibly fun.
Yeah, and I think the point that I made on the podcast we recorded, kind of reacting to our first initial thoughts, I was saying how, look, even if you hate these teams, I can't relate to not wanting to watch this amount of talent in one baseball series. I stand by that. But the other thing that I think is important to say, kind of in response to the people that are eye-rolling at this matchup and saying, oh, of course, these are the teams with the biggest payrolls and all these, it's just like, this hasn't happened very often. You know, if this is the World Series match, do I want this to be the World Series matchup every year for the next 10 years? No, absolutely not, right? When I think about the Yankees being in the World Series all those years in a row in the 90s before we were doing this for a job, that sounds miserable, right? I do not want that. But the reality is we haven't had that. And I don't expect that to be the case moving forward. But once we got so close to this, I was like, you know what? Let's just do this. Let's just get, not just get this over with, but like, let's see what it would actually be like to have these two teams do this. And
yeah,
expanding on the point I said in the last pod, like the fact that this will involve Ohtani and Soto, which was not something when we were thinking about Yankees and Dodgers over the last 10 years, I think does make it that much more exciting.
Jordan, you have heard me describe our job from time to time. I use this metaphor as a series of concentric circles of baseball fandom. And you and I are in the middle of this. We are total nuts. We are obsessed. We are enthralled with every single thing baseball related. And then our job and our mission is to pull people closer to the center. And whether that's pulling someone from like rung 10 to rung 9 or rung 2 to rung 1, whether I can get you to care about the Arizona Fall League or get you to care about Aaron Judge, both of those things are wins. And this series, more than any other series that we have had, is pulling people to the center. Now, it is pulling people from way, away, way far away from the center closer, but there will be people in our lives and in your lives, beautiful listener, who are paying attention to this thing for these 10 days, and you will enjoy getting to talk about ball, flaunt your ball knowledge to those people in this window. And it will be very rare and very special. And I hope that people can take advantage of it.
100%. And by the way, it's still baseball. Yes, are we going to spend the bulk of this episode and the broadcast are going to lean into the fact that we have six or seven of the most famous baseball players in one series, as they should. But it's still baseball. We still have relievers full of anonymous journeymen and incredible individual stories. Players who, I mean, again, the opportunity we talk about, okay, you have the Rangers and Diamondbacks introducing some of these players that we haven't necessarily talked about. But the reality is fewer people were watching. Whereas now, if Jake Cousins strikes out the side against the Dodgers, a lot more people are going to know about him than when someone on the Rangers or the Diamondbacks did it last year, you know, with respect to Josh Spores and Paul Sewald and Kevin Ginkle. You know, this is an opportunity for all of the players on these rosters beyond just the stars to raise their profiles, for people to fall in love with them and ultimately maybe win World Series MVP in the most improbable fashion. All of that is very possible.
Tommy Edman just won NLCS MVP. Okay. You don't have to look too far. In a series that had Lindor and Pete and even Mark Vientos, right? And Otani and Betts and Teoscar Hernandez, Tommy Edman, who didn't play a baseball game until August, right? Who I don't know if you can buy his jersey at the team store.
Oh, I hope that's corrected when I get there on Thursday, man. I would be so disappointed.
That is such a great stat god question. How many NLCS, ALCS, World Series MVPs have won the award while their jersey not being available at the team store? The Steve Pierce theory.
True. Unfortunately, I think at this point, it says more about the people producing the jerseys than the team itself. Anyway, that's a conversation for another day. Let's get into this series, Jake. And like we said, so many narratives to get to. There's no correct order into the things that we could get into with this, and we are going to go position by position. But let's just start rattling them off. I mean, where do you want to begin?
I want to begin with LA versus New York, like East Coast versus West Coast. Do we care about this? No. Do people? Oh, yeah. People love to pretend they despise a coast across the country. Doesn't make any sense to me, but I get it. I will say, having flown here to LA from New York, they are very different looking places, right? But people will, there will be coast to coast. People will make Tupac, Biggie references. Mm-hmm. That will happen.
Yep. Yeah. And we haven't had, I guess we had, you know, Dodgers, Red Sox in 18 was a version of that. Of course, Boston and LA is a rivalry in its own way, but New York, of course, carries a whole other level of, as you just referenced, cultural significance that does not mean that much to us personally as people who grew up in the DC suburbs, but pretending like it doesn't matter is also probably foolish.
And we're both Tupac people, for what it is worth.
Yeah, which is fine. Again, doesn't mean we don't like Biggie. That's allowed, right? We can like both of them.
You can like beer and tacos, Jordan.
Okay, nice.
The other big narrative that's on my mind is the MVP versus the MVP. Some great stat production from friend of the show, Sarah Langs. First time that the two presumptive MVPs are facing off in the World Series since 2018, Jordan, Brewster, Gratterall, and Joe Kelly. No, since 2012, Buster Posey and Miguel Cabrera in 2012. First time the MVPs are going to face off in the World Series for top seeds since Thurman Munson and Joe Morgan in 1976. Now, I know that sounds like cherry picking, but here's what it really means. This is the first time that the two best teams have the two best players and are playing in the World Series
in a very long time. And I think the thing that I'm compelled about with this is I have spent a lot of the season being annoyed by Yankees fans being sensitive about how much attention Otani is getting, because it's like, you don't have to argue about this anymore. Like, they're not in the same league. Judge and Otani are not competing for the same award. They will both win.
They're breathing different air.
Exactly. And so while that is still true, and we expect them both to win, now it's just unavoidable. Now it's like, okay, well, here they are both in the World Series and only one of them can win. And whether one of them, every time one of them strikes out and one of them doesn't strike out, it's just going to become, oh, well, he's obviously better. Oh, well, he's obviously better. Now, I will maintain that one of them pitches and one of them doesn't. And Aaron Judge himself referred to Otani as the best player in the game a couple hours ago. So we don't have to necessarily have that debate. But at this point, that will continue. Both fan bases will insist that their MVP is the superior player. And not that this series will determine that. It will for a lot of people, whether that's fair or not.
I actually kind of love it because these are both really difficult players to hate, I think. Because they don't, besides being on the teams that people hate and being really good, they're not overtly hateable.
Yes.
Like, they both seem like pretty nice gents and are respected around the game. And so to watch these fan bases contort themselves into fake hate for a week.
Yes.
That I'm excited for. Like, yes, we will get a lot of, and we got this in Queens. I don't know if we talked about this. Otani comes up to the plate in Queens. Guy screams, "What's the spread, Shohei?" Like, we'll get a lot of that.
Oh, sure. Yeah, of course. And yeah, I'm sure the chirps will be ridiculous in the Bronx. And that's, I was going to say, that's all fair game. We don't need to have discourse about what isn't okay to be screaming at major league players. But I will say that to that point, though, I'm glad you brought that up, because I've been thinking about this since I was there to watch the Yankees win, which is that, like, man, like, the Yankees, like, they're not that hateable. Like, the players, the people involved, yes, like, Jazz, obviously, you know, pisses off a lot of people. There's some bravado with Soto that I can imagine some irksome people. But, man, compared to some of the Yankees teams of our childhood and all these things, I'm just like, and Dodgers, too. I'm just looking at this like, man, I don't know. I'm Mookie. Like, am I going to hate Mookie? Like, you know, am I going to hate Freddie Freeman is just like this kind of goofy guy limping around trying to help his team. Like, all these things. Like, I understand that there are, of course, it's just fans are always going to find reasons to take. But I'm watching these teams. Yes, of course, I understand why people are rooting against them. And people listening right now might be rolling their eyes and saying, what's wrong with you? Of course, these guys are hateable. Of course, there's some personalities on every team where you're like, that guy sucks. But for the most part, man, the people that we're talking about, Stanton, all these guys, like, they're just really cool and really good. And I like watching them.
I'm not exhausted by any of these people yet. And, like, I think that the Astros, for all of their cheating, their bigger crime was just being around every year. And so, like, it was so easy for people to really hate Alex Bregman because, oh, well, the weather gets cold and this smirking third baseman is on my television again.
Yeah, and Correa did lean into the villain bit for sure, right? But we have always said since the beginning, like, really, are we really going to hate Altuve? Like, I can't get there, but I understand people can't. But anyway, I just think that's another interesting dynamic with these rosters in particular.
Who exhausts us, like, on these teams? I'm not exhausted by Rizzo, but, like, I've seen this before.
I would say the one that I could imagine being most annoyed by in terms of just, like, he's still there and I've been watched is honestly Muncy. Like, Muncy is amazing, but as far as just, like, a recurring postseason character who has very much embraced being like, yeah, like, we're the Dodgers and all you idiots are doubting us. Like, I think he comes across as more quote unquote obnoxious. I don't really feel that way about any of these guys, but he's just someone that fits that criteria.
Muncy is in our good book after he took some time out of his day to pump up Brent Honeywell in the post game. Maybe a little bit more on that later. Another one big difference between these two teams is the lack of World Series experience, right? Now, that makes sense considering the Dodgers were last there in 2020. That's really not that long ago. The Yankees were last there in 2009. That is long ago. We got an email from a listener who said, I was 9 years old in 2009, and now I'm 24. And in my brain, I was like, that doesn't make sense. And then you do the math, and it does, right? It's been a long time for the Yankees, and so obviously there are no holdovers. The Dodgers, it's all those guys in the 2020 team. Daniel Hudson, Ryan, who threw the last out of the 2019 World Series, if you remember. Ryan Brazier, who was on a lot of those Red Sox teams. And then Freddie Freeman. Freddie Freeman, who won the World Series in 2021 with the Braves. On the Yankees, three guys. Juan Soto, he was there. Gerrit Cole,
he was also there.
He was also there.
Part of the 2019 World Series, yep.
But remember, Gerrit Cole does not have a ring.
No.
Okay, so he was on the 2018 Astros, but not the 2017 Astros. So he's still looking for his first ring. And then, of course, Anthony Rizzo, who was on the 2016 Cubs. And so will that gap matter in experience? No, I really don't think so. Like, the Yankees have played so many postseason games at this point.
It doesn't sway how I think about the series. But in terms of just, like, what winning will mean to a lot of these guys, it is a little bit different. Not that there aren't still a ton of, you know, and obviously for the Yankees especially, like, or even for the Dodgers who are trying to win their first, I'm rolling my eyes, real World Series, you know, after 2020. That is still something that I know even people on the team still care about.
I want to talk about that.
Sure.
Multiple things could be true. Mm. What the Dodgers did in 2020 is unbelievably impressive. You could even argue in some ways more impressive and more difficult to get through what that season was. At the very least, it was different. It is a World Series, right? It is a World Series, and it's something that the players on the team should be proud of. However, all the time, we say the following sentence. First time this has happened in a full season since. And that qualifier is just used to be like, wow, this thing hasn't happened in a long time. Right. And that's because the 2020 season was freaking weird. Calling it a Mickey Mouse ring or a rinky dink ring, to me, downplays what they accomplished. However, I guarantee you if the Dodgers win, there will be players being like, now we got one. Like, and that will 100% happen. I wrote this about Corey Seager last year, that there was a teammate on the Rangers who told me, like, yeah, he wants a real one.
Yeah.
Right? That is definitely something these guys were thinking about. They won't admit it till they win it, but it is a absolute narrative hanging over the series.
At the very least, no parade, right? They haven't had a parade. And Roberts has referred to that, right? They want the parade. That is not something that they have actually gotten. All right, let's move on to another part about this, which is like the first thing when we have it confirmed is like, this is the World Series matchup we have seen the most. This is the 12th time. Not we. That has happened the most.
This is the World Series matchup that has been seen the most.
That has occurred the most, right? But that is very different. 12th time these two teams have met in the World Series. The Yankees have won 8 of the first 11. These are also the two teams with the most World Series appearances in general. The Yankees, it is their 40th, or I guess 41st, I should say. They are 27-13 in the World Series. The Dodgers, sneaky, terrible winning percentage over their first 21 World Series appearances, 7-14. Bunch of losers, that Dodger franchise is.
7-14?
7-14.
That'll work. I mean, that's 50%.
That's still seven.
It's a coin flip.
Seven out of 14, 7-14.
Oh, no, that's bad. Yeah, that's not good. Never mind.
Okay. Yeah, let's be clear there. This is their 22nd appearance, 7-14 in their first 21 appearances. But as we mentioned, we have not seen this. 1981 was a very long time ago. And the other interesting component that I want to mention is that not only was 1981 a long time ago, because interleague was not a thing for a very long time, after 1981, they did not play again until 2004. And I went back yesterday and watched on YouTube. You can watch the full game. They have this a couple of the games from this 2004 series in June between the Dodgers and Yankees in L.A., and there's just Dave Roberts is leading off, you know, Alex Cora is playing second base, and Gagne closes out the first game. He's in the midst of his 84 consecutive game save streak. Like, a lot of great moments in that. But again, like, this is not a matchup that was ever a thing. And so, like, I don't really know how people could genuinely call it a rivalry when they simply were not playing. Obviously, over the last decade or so, we've seen it happen more frequently. We've seen them play 3 games a year in 2010, 2013, 2016, 2019, last year and this year. And we'll get to what happened this year a little bit later on. But that is just a funny thing about this. It's like, okay, yeah, I get why we call it a rivalry, but also doesn't mean anything to us. Like, it's been cool when they played recently, but we haven't really seen it in games that actually matter.
Subway Series?
What about it?
I mean, this is really, if you think about it, this is the first Subway Series. I mean, yes, the Yankees played. Yeah. I'm going to get there. Yes, the Yankees played the New York Giants many times, but that was really a walk between the Polo Grounds and Yankee Stadium.
A walk down the block series.
Right? Like, that was a... I do that walk all the time. It's like a 20-minute walk over a bridge. It's like you don't have to take the train.
A city bike series.
Yankees Dodgers going from uptown Manhattan or the Bronx to all the way down to Brooklyn. Like, you had to take the train for that. This was the first Subway Series. Now, I was bantering with someone. If you tried to take the train between games 2 and 3 to go back across.
Oh, you mean now?
Yeah,
that would. I mean, I literally, like, could you get there in time? No. I don't
know how fast the train goes.
I don't think you could get there in time, even with the off day. Maybe you could get there like right before first pitch on Monday after Friday's games or after Saturday's game. But yeah, seems tough.
All right, Jordan, I think we should take a break. And when we get back, we will introduce some of the main characters in this World Series and then go position by position. And welcome back, Baseball Barbercast, Jake Mintz, Jordan Schusterman. I, on our document here, where it says main characters, I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 names on this list. You could probably pump it up to 9 with the two managers, with Dave Roberts and Aaron Boone. Do I have the correct 7 in your mind? I have Shohei Ohtani, Mookie Betts, Freddie Freeman, Aaron Judge, Juan Soto, Giancarlo Stanton, and Gerrit Cole. Obviously, we have some best performance by a supporting actor or actress, right? But these to me feel like the big 7.
Yeah. I feel like Yamamoto belongs, considering he has the largest contract that a pitcher has ever received. And okay. I know he hasn't been a main character from a performance standpoint thus far this October, but he feels pretty freaking important. And you could say that about Rodon as well. But Yamamoto, because he's new, because he has this record contract, because the Dodgers starting pitching is a massive question, I think,
and because
he has
the Yankees wanted him so badly that they reserved his number,
right?
I
think he has to be on there as well.
Right.
So yes.
So we just previewed Yamamoto. Let's get into the other guys. I want to begin with Shohei Ohtani.
Sure. Pretty reasonable place to start.
Yeah. As significant as Aaron Judge is, the global reach of Ohtani, we've never seen anything like this in baseball. He makes people care and makes people watch in a way that no one else does. Now, part of that is because, again, yes, this guy also pitches, right? He's not doing that now, and it's still pretty big.
And
right?
People are still talking about it as if he might.
That's the thing. Can we just get that out of the way? He's not going to pitch. He's not going to pitch. Where are you at on it?
I don't think he's going to pitch. I also don't think he's going to pitch. But what if he did?
What if he did?
but again, like, we're talking about it because he does do it, right? That's a reminder.
No one is being like, oh, what if Giancarlo throws game 6 out of the bullpen, right? Like that, even though he's not going to pitch, the possibility
exactly.
is amazing.
Exactly. The fact that it is being asked about with a straight face is so funny and so amazing. Anyway, I just wrote about Ohtani. You can read it on Yahoo Sports. And my just kind of thesis and just thinking about it, it's like, what we've been looking forward to this for so long. And the thing I kind of led with is like, for the last 6 years, this was the only time of year we were not talking about him. Every other time, and by the way, as soon as the World Series would end, what were we talking about? Ohtani, because he was winning MVP, or he was like, you know, we really think he was going to get traded, but it was like, okay, what are the Angels going to do to help Ohtani get to the postseason? Oh, he won this award, this award, this award, this award, and then spring shows up. Oh my God, Ohtani, oh, he's pitching, he's doing this, all regular season. It didn't matter that the Angels sucked. We talked about him all the time. And then Angels would get eliminated, and then we had to turn our attention elsewhere. And now we get to keep talking about him, which is really cool. And the fact that, you know, we knew the Dodgers were going to be in the playoffs this year. They're the only team we could say that about. But we didn't know it was going to get to this point. And by the way, after Tatis hit that home run, I was still like, oh, well, maybe next year for Shohei, right? But here we are. Not only do we get him in the World Series, we get him in the World Series against the Yankees. And all of those times we were thinking about it, watching him in the WBC, oh, what would it be like? What would it be like? What would it be like? Well, here it is. And while it would be cool if he was also pitching, he has brought his offensive game to a point where by itself, he is so worth watching. And if anything, leaves us excited for when he is doing both in the postseason next year.
Aaron Judge. Aaron Judge has not been Aaron Judge in October. He has not been horrible. Okay. If let's say Teoscar Hernandez had the exact same playoff line as Aaron Judge, no one would be talking about it either way. That is exemplifying how it is to be Aaron Judge. When you are Aaron Judge, every move matters. When you are the captain of the Yankees, everything has significance. There have been memes on the internet about Giancarlo and Juan Soto carrying Aaron Judge to October, through October. Not to October.
Not to October. He carried them to October. Let's be very clear about that. Yep.
I think those memes are funny and fair and also hilariously small sample size oriented. That being said, they exist, right? Now, I don't think Aaron Judge gives two hoots about people making fun of him on the internet if he has a ring. He'll have the ring forever.
Oh, yeah. And by the way, if he goes 0 for 50 with 50 strikeouts and they win, he ain't going to care.
And can I say part of the reason that he wouldn't care is because his stamp is on this team beyond his at-bats. He is the essence of this group. Captain, eye-rolling, grandioseness aside, like, it matters.
He's Derek Jeter with a 220 OPS plus.
Okay? That's what this is. Okay? That's what this is. And so, all of those jokes, he doesn't give a rat's ass. Doesn't care. And that's good, right? That being said, boy, I hope he goes off.
Well, I was going to say,
I hope he goes off.
The opportunity is still there to hit the one home run that means everything. And we thought we had those. I know they ended up losing that game 3 against Cleveland, but like that was still a moment, the homer off Clase, that we will remember for a long time. And so there's still the opportunity there, the stage for him to have, you know, more legendary Yankees moments that he has not yet had.
He's still walking a ton.
Yeah.
And because Stanton is doing what he's doing, mm-hmm. that is fine.
Sure.
And Judge has talked about this all year, how he's at his best when he's not pressing and expanding the zone and taking his walks and trusting the guys behind him to drive him in. And there were points this season where guys just weren't doing that, right? And so that's when the Yankees would get into trouble. It's like, oh, well, Soto single, Judge walk, double play, inning over, right? And so because the guys below him, particularly Stanton, are so hot, it makes it easier to swallow. Let's do Soto.
Mm. Okay.
Good player.
Quality ball player. 25 years old. He will turn 26 on Friday, the day of game one. I also touched on Soto when I wrote about Ohtani because if we remember, when Soto was traded to the Yankees, it was a different thing. It was like they need him. Like they just had this horrible season and now they need Juan Soto. You know, we didn't think the Dodgers needed Ohtani and it turned out that they actually did need him more than we thought, right? But for Soto, it was like, okay, please, like, take us to the promised land. Whatever is going to happen in free, like, we will send all this massive trade haul away with you only 1 year left in your deal because you are that difference maker. And as we just saw, he is exactly that. Not only does he have arguably his best regular season, but he does it when they needed him to. And he is an unbelievable performer, an unbelievable, just guaranteed good at bat to have, right? Because ultimately, not that he can't strike out, but ultimately Judge and Stanton, they will strike out in a big spot. Those things will happen. But just, I mean, what Soto is just doing mentally to opposing pitchers is a lot. And he is now, he's already done it. We've seen him win the World Series before as a child. Now he is a slightly older child. This is the third time he's faced the Dodgers in the postseason. He, of course, defeated them memorably in 2019. He defeated them in 2022 with the Padres. Now he does it again. He's back in LA where he won the Home Run Derby a couple years ago. And ultimately, his free agency is still going to be talked about all the time, whether or not you think that he's definitely going to stay or not. It sounds ridiculous, but I think I am more excited for his free agency than Ohtani's. again, it's a stupid thing to compare, but, and maybe it's because Soto's just been my favorite player basically since he debuted. And I just kind of always assumed Ohtani was going to end up on the Dodgers. At this point, there's just so many things with him that are so amazing. And knowing that we're still in the early stages of an all-time career, everything about him is just truly captivating.
Mookie Betts has 4 home runs this postseason. Only Giancarlo Stanton and Mark Vientos, unbelievable, have more. Mookie Betts is going for his 3rd World Series ring. Okay. 3rd World Series ring. That's hard to do. That's really hard to do. He, in a weird way, gets lost in the Shohei shuffle. What a player. And in the same way that when you see Ohtani in person and you're like, that dude is huge. I think Jordan and Mookie weigh the same amount. Genuinely do. I have 20 pounds on Mookie Betts. Most of it's in my caboose.
Yeah.
But I do have 20 pounds on Mookie Betts.
I feel pretty good that Mookie's still got some weight on me. But that says more about me than Mookie. The point is he's not a big dude. He is an amazing athlete, an amazing player. Someone who was playing shortstop because they asked him to for much of the season. Now he's back
playing
in the outfield.
Shortstop the last time these two teams played.
Yeah. Right.
In June.
We'll get to that. We'll get to that a little bit later. But he is amazing. And obviously, because he missed those 2 months with the broken hand, like the overall line isn't necessarily the best version of Mookie we've ever seen. But what we're watching right now is pretty damn good. He is absolutely a part of this here too. And it's also a reminder, when we talk about Ohtani, it's like, wow, Ohtani just gets into the World Series right away. That's what happened with Mookie in 2020, right? It's like, oh, this does seem familiar. You just trade for this guy and you give him hundreds of millions of dollars and then he takes the World Series. It's pretty cool.
There was a pocket of time there where Mookie looked bored. Do you remember this?
Yeah, 100%.
Where there was like 2 years when he was with the Dodgers where it's like,
absolutely.
Wow, he's finishing 5th in MVP and he just didn't look. Yeah.
He looks enthused. Rejuvenated. Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, 100%. And then the last thing I'll say about him, obviously, is he's facing the Yankees. Yankee Stadium is where his first career hit came. Obviously, he played them a bunch. And I think that'll be cool. I think Yankees fans will enjoy having Mookie Betts back in the building.
Freddie Freeman. Yeah. Now, if we're going to compare my LB tally to Mookie, I think I can beat Freddie Freeman in a race right now. I do.
Yeah.
Now, yeah. Only one of us has an ankle that looks like a cantaloupe, and that's Freddie. What this dude has done this October to play through an ankle, that is not okay. Just not okay. It's been amazing. Now, he didn't play in Game 5 or Game 6.
Yeah, he's missed some games along the way.
He's missed some games, but he's grinding through it, and he's earned a lot of respect in that room. You talk to any Dodgers player about any offensive player on that team, like they'll be like, it's not Ohtani or Betts. They're like, dude, what Freddie's doing right now is remarkable. That's the guy that they want to talk about because of what he's playing through. Now, how the Dodgers go about choosing to deploy him in the World Series will be very interesting just because the ankle's going to need rest. He does not have an extra base hit this postseason, which is understandable because he can't really plant on his cantaloupe ankle. Yet the bat-to-ball skills are legit, and he can find a single if you need it.
Yeah, he is still dangerous in that sense, but there, as you mentioned, are clearly some limitations, and that's why at points over the last couple of weeks, Dave Roberts has said, sorry, buddy, you're not playing. But it does track with Freddie because he's obviously one of the great hitters of his generation, but the other thing that he was known for is that he showed up and played every day. And so while I doubt he has ever played through something of this nature, this is what he does, man. Freddie posts, and it is not surprising that he has done everything he can to kind of show up in this way.
Speaking of someone playing despite a body that doesn't want them to, Giancarlo Stanton.
Let's tie this to Freddie quickly. I hadn't thought about this much, but these two have been linked for a long time. Maybe not perfectly directly, but these two guys were both second round picks out of LA area high schools in 2007, two picks apart.
Wow.
And they were both, you know, this is like Mike Moustakas is like the guy that year. And so obviously California always has a bunch of guys. These two guys were well known, but they weren't universally considered like the best players in California. But within a year in pro ball, Freddie with the Braves, Stanton with the Marlins, it's like, oh my God, like these are unbelievable talents, immediately the top prospects in the game. And they share a division for a long time, and they're very different players and very different personalities. But those guys have just been incredible. Two of the most productive, remarkable hitters that we've seen over the last 15 years. And as we pivot to Stanton here, he's just been one of the biggest stories of this month. Obviously, he has maybe the most raw power of any individual player we've ever seen. He is now amassing one of the great postseason resumes we have ever seen. He is the man with the most home runs in the regular season among all active players. And while he is, you know, they're, I guess, 2 months apart, they're both 35. You know, how much longer are we, you know, going to get elite production from them? But Yankees fans don't care at this point. You know, they're not worried about the rest of this contract. Right now, Giancarlo is an absolute difference maker. And when you consider, too, that he will be playing in LA, where he hit that famous home run out of Dodger Stadium in 2015, where the Dodgers could have traded for him. You know, he had a limited list of his that whole negotiation, he controlled it because he had this massive contract. And the only way he was going to be able to be dealt and the Marlins were going to be able to get out from under that is if they would deal him to a place that he wanted to go. And the Dodgers were on that list. And so were the Yankees. The Dodgers ultimately did not show as much interest. He ends up on the Yankees. And now he is in this spot where he is one of the players that has played the longest without reaching a World Series, behind only McCutcheon, Arenado, and Goldschmidt among active players, most games without reaching the World Series. So a lot going on with Stanton, and he is a singular talent. And I hope he hits one more at least, because it is a sight to behold for sure.
Last one, Gerrit Cole. Yankee fan today, tomorrow, forever, signs the deal with the Bombers after the 2019 season. Big free agent contract. And we get the photo of him holding the sign as a child. Little Garrett at the Yankees game, even though he grew up in Orange County. Diehard Yankees fan as a kid. And the sign is still around, which is amazing. I wonder if we see that brought out if they win the World Series. Ooh, that'd be great.
At the parade, at least.
At the parade, or if they win it here in LA. And like his parents have the sign in their house, they drive it up. Like, yeah. Okay. That's a great parlay.
Well, we saw the sign at the press conference, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
maybe it's back home in near New York. But either way, we will see it for sure.
We will see it, yeah. Gerrit Cole has had a fascinating year. Remember, when his elbow started barking in March, we thought it was Tommy Johnson and it was
that's a deuces rat, baby.
For the year.
That's a wrap. We were like, all right, it finally came for Gerrit Cole. He's been one of the most durable, amazing. This is Gerrit Cole's never going to get hurt. Oh, okay. That's it. We're not going to see him.
And he said, not today. Not today. What do you say to the God of death? No.
Said, not today. Not tomorrow. Not forever.
Not forever. My elbow shall rage against the dying of the light. And he took some time to recover.
Took the time he needed.
The time he needed. Took time away. I believe he did not start till early June. But when he came back, he effectively rehabbed at the major league level, which was hilarious. But he got right, and down the stretch, he has been sensational for the Yankees. Had a playoff start against the Guardians. He was not particularly good.
Game two.
But he's still Gerrit Cole. And the thing to watch in this series is if he starts three games. Okay. Starting three games in a 7-game series is so badass. It's so cool to say, I started 3 out of the 7 baseball games that were played
in the year 2024.
And it is only possible in 2024. It's so cool. It's so cool. I hope he does it. And honestly, we'll talk about this in a sec about what we want to happen. I hope Gerrit Cole wins all three. I hope Gerrit Cole starts three games and wins them all. Like throw seven innings in each.
Yeah.
I just, a badass pitching performance to me is top of the pops.
Yeah. No, he's amazing. And he doesn't have a ring yet. He was obviously amazing for the for the Astros in 2019, but he is still looking for this one. And as that Yankee fan today, tomorrow, forever, he would certainly love to make it happen.
Let's take a quick break. And when we get back, we will throw position by position into turbo mode and say goodbye. Welcome back to Baseball Barbercast. Position by position, let's get right into it. Catcher, throw those legs on, find your knee savers, wear one off the mask. Will Smith for the Dodgers against Austin Wells for the Yankees. Will Smith, who is a player, this is nominative determinism, Jordan. The idea that you become your name. Not because Will Smith is a charismatic actor who once slapped Chris Rock. But because Will Smith might be the most boring name imaginable, and this Will Smith literally walks up to the Jack Harlow song in which the first words are, "I'm vanilla, baby." And I don't think I could describe Will Smith as a character better than that. He's very good at playing baseball as a catcher, but he is indeed vanilla, baby. 6-for-38 this October with two homers. Austin Wells is a very interesting contrast to Mr. Vanilla Baby. Not that he's chocolate or strawberry or cookies and cream, but Austin Wells has a little bit of spice to him. He is a rookie catching in the World Series for the New York Yankees. Drafted out of Arizona as a bat-first backstop, Wells has become a just magnificent defender whose bat has not progressed as we thought. He has struggled mightily in October, but just to have the oomph to be a rookie catching for the Yankees in October says more than anybody could ever say about Austin Wells.
Totally. But let's remember, I mean, July and August, this dude was raking. And that's when we were talking about him as a possible AL Rookie of the Year candidate, which maybe he still is. But he was horrible in September and start offensively and started October super cold. Got a homer during that Cleveland series. But and we've seen a little bit more of Trevino. But Wells can control the running game a little bit more. And I have to imagine they're going to stick with him. Will he still be in the cleanup spot? I don't know. But he is going to be somewhere in that middle of the order. And to your point, the fact that he's even in this position is pretty amazing. However, on the whole, Smith's floor is so much higher. And I think you still have to lean towards him here.
He's vanilla, baby. And, you know,
Vanilla's
good.
First base. So Freddie Freeman, as we talked about, can't walk and maybe can't play. But we're assuming he will be in there in some form. If not, it could be Muncy. And they, you know, play Kike at third or whatever. But Anthony Rizzo has also had a very strange postseason. He too was coming back from injury. That is a couple of broken fingers. So not lower level, lower body. But Rizzo's offense has been inconsistent. His defense has been inconsistent. He's been, I don't know. It's been a very strange postseason for Rizzo. Watching him up close was very weird. Obviously, he's very experienced in this time of year. So it seems strange to be like, he can't handle this because he's the last person you would say that about, but he's just looked kind of off. He's had some big hits. I still expect him to be in the lineup, but it's just been a strange month for him. And comparing him, I certainly would rather have Muncy, but versus Freddie, I don't know. I don't really know what to make of him.
I think that if the Yankees had played the Mets and their two left-handed starters plus David Peterson, you would have seen more John Birdie at first against those lefties. But because the Dodgers don't have a left-handed starter and have just one lefty in the bullpen, Rizzo's going to get the bulk of the playing time at first base.
They do have the left-handed starter, but his toe hurts. So
he
won't be pitching. That's a great point. I think that I still expect to see Rizzo. in terms of who I prefer, I guess Rizzo, just, but I don't know. Like, it's weird. It's,
I will take,
yeah, it's not really Dodger. It doesn't feel fair to.
I'll take Dodger first base boy.
Okay.
Whether that's like Freddie Muncy or Max Freeman or whatever.
Sure. Sure. Second base. We have Gleyber Torres, who has stepped up in a very big way and been very, very productive out of the leadoff spot against, I guess, a combination of Gavin Lux and Chris Taylor. I mean,
I want to introduce Gleyber a little bit deeper than that.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, so I know. I was going to say, I was just going to say it's easily Gleyber. So let's just talk about him.
Gleyber Torres, let's turn the clock back. Acquired from the Cubs for Aroldis Chapman in 2016, right? At the deadline. And during the Yankees reset. Remember they did like that hard reset where they kind of pulled the plug that summer? Gleyber has not reached his ceiling. He will be a free agent this winter, right? He has left something on the table. That being said, what he is right now, which is a damn good hitter at the top of this lineup who takes his walks, is a very useful
huge
and
deal.
Important piece for the
Yankees. Huge deal. Huge deal.
Huge deal. Now look, is he a poo-poo defender at second base who is going to run into some outs on the bases? Yes. Yes. Would I build the whole plane out of Gleyber Torres?
No.
If I was a GM, would I feel comfortable signing Gleyber Torres to a long-term deal? Absolutely not. For the next 12 days, this dude is absolutely vital.
Gleyber's free agency will be fascinating. He will be one of the youngest free agents available. He turns 28 in December. And he's hit for a long time, but this was certainly a step down after what he did last year. But in this case, it's still an obvious advantage over what the Dodgers have at second base. So let's go to shortstop.
However,
anything else?
On second base.
Sure.
Gavin Lux is someone who I'm very interested in. First round pick, mega prospect. The Dodgers choose to hang on to him. He never really performs. He tears his ACL in spring training in 23, comes back this year, is really iffy to start. And then once he gets fully healthy with that leg, I mean, he's the third best Dodgers hitter in the second half of the year. Like, he was amazing. Now, he's really banged up right now. I am curious to see if he's got a moment this October. This is someone who I really root for. I really like Gavin as a dude. Really nice cat. And so he is someone where, like, I feel bad that he's banged up right now. Because there's a version of this where if he stayed healthy, where he rides that amazing second half into October, and we're talking about, do the Dodgers have another like cornerstone dude here? Because next year, like, Gavin Lux, sneaky all-star pick, you know? And so it's kind of a bummer that he hurt his hip at this moment heading into October on the big stage.
But we probably will see him in there. In the lineup, he didn't have a hit against the Mets, but that makes sense because of who he was playing against the pitchers. So, and it's more about, again, if Gleyber was playing like he was in the regular season or for much of the regular season, this might be closer. But Gleyber just looks great right now.
Great example of how talking about the playoffs is like what we're doing right now in the moment. Who would I rather have the rest of their careers the next 5 years? I'll take Lux over Torres, like 100%, right? Personally.
All right. Yeah.
4 years.
I'm like the highest on Gleyber, so it's an interesting discussion. He's not,
but right now it's not a question.
He's like only 2 years older than him. A year older.
Never mind.
So again, that speaks to Gleyber, and Lux has kind of been around for a long time. But I hear your point. I think Lux is worth taking a moment on. So that's fair. Let's go to shortstop. Again, two more just truly fascinating characters. Tommy Edman. I mean, I already talked about Edman on the last show. I thought he was under the radar pickup at the time. He was just hurt. He's been a very good player in this league for multiple years. And hell yeah, Dodgers, like, this was a brilliant acquisition. And he looks great. Is he going to drive in 11 runs again? Probably not, but clearly a very helpful piece, particularly against someone like Carlos Rodon, someone like Nestor Cortes Jr., who we're expecting to get added to the roster, right? This is now a piece, especially against left-handed pitching, that could become very, very, very helpful. How the Dodgers deploy him, we will see. He's a solid defender at shortstop. Volpe, though, has had some very good at-bats. I know on the whole offensively, this was a disappointing second season for him. However, he's still playing a reasonably good shortstop. You know, some would say great. I know he was a gold glove last year. Is he an elite shortstop? Maybe, maybe not. You know, there's some instances, but he's a good shortstop. Offensively, he has had a lot better at-bats. Boone talked about that during the Cleveland series. And he's walking way more than he was in the regular season, which is certainly encouraging because ultimately that is so important because the whole goal of both lineups really at the bottom half is let's just get this back to the top. And so even if you're not driving in runs, if you can just get on base and just make it that much closer to get to Judge and Soto and all those guys, that is very valuable. So this is close. I love Edmund. He's obviously playing well. He's a little bit more of a safe bet because Volpe can still look overmatched at times. But this is close. This is a fun one.
Well, I think it's just close because of Volpe's defense. Like, there are moments where you remember that Edmund's not a primary yeah. shortstop.
Sure.
Particularly with the arm strength is where it comes into play. When he has to go to his right and make a big throw from the hole, he just doesn't have the gunpowder in there, whereas Volpe does. Now, again, Volpe can't play center field, and like Edmund can, and like that's why
for some reason they need him to. Then yes, exactly.
Right now, again, he's playing short in part because Miguel Rojas got hurt. Mm-hmm. That's just important to remember. But yeah, I think I will take Edmund, but a Volpe World Series MVP run here would be awesome.
That'd
be
right. Great. I mean, the Volpe thing, we've been talking about this since he was drafted, let alone, you know, debuted and now on this team in the World Series. But it really, talk about just like watching him in the clubhouse celebration. I mean, it's as much as it's cliche and we've talked about it for 3-4 years, it's amazing. It is an amazing thing to watch him, you know, live this dream out. So
it's cool.
All right, let's go to third base.
Dude, here, third base. I don't think you could have two more different third base. Max Muncy. Who is
against, yeah.
Max Muncy, who's built like a I got no words. He's thick. Okay. Thick boy. He's basically a first baseman who's doing his best over there most of the time.
Yeah.
Against Jazz Chisholm, who's thin and wiry and is a center fielder shortstop playing third base.
Who had never played there before.
Never played there before. Amazing contrast. Muncy, what do you need to know about him? Likes to walk. Gets on base. Was locked in the middle of that Mets series. Got on base, what, like 8 to 10 consecutive plate appearances in a row or something ridiculous? He's a really good player. He's important to this team. He's been there a long time. And he gives them depth when he's locked in. And that's pretty important.
468 on base percentage this month for Max Muncy. And he's got the power too, right? So he is a threat. Jazz has been terrible. There is no way around it. He has been very, I would say, he's had some, you know, muffs for sure. But he's made some plays at third, particularly ranging to his left, where it's like, man, it's just a reminder of he is a truly elite athlete. And Brian Cashman said something really interesting in his scrum before the game the other day, where he just talked about all the unpredictable parts of the season. And Brian Cashman, the guy who traded for Jazz, said, like, he's like, yeah, you know, we traded for Jazz and I thought he was going to play second and Glaber was going to move to third. And, you know, Glaber's still at second. Jazz is just playing third. And that, of course, had to do with Glaber just like really, really didn't want to move. And Jazz was like, screw it, whatever. I'm on the Yankees. Cool. I'll play third. Or who cares? I'll figure it out. And that's honestly like credit to Jazz. I know there are some things about him that you know, annoy people. And that's fine. He doesn't care. He's not going to change. And he's going to keep talking his stuff, which we love. But it's been a rough watch offensively. He has been just, I mean, overmatched, out of control. Like, it's just been bad. So it can flip because he's so talented and he could have a moment. Absolutely. And if that could change this lineup in another way. But obviously right now, Muncy is just such a safe bet.
Not to make excuses for Jazz. This is a man from the Bahamas who then played for the Diamondbacks and Marlins. He looked cold, straight up. He looked cold. Understandably. I don't know
that.
If he had ever played in like a meaningful game where he was that cold in Cleveland and New York. Like, yeah, he was going full balaclava.
For sure. Obviously in the minors, maybe he had some games. But, you know, that's a fair point.
I would love to see him come out to L.A. in the hot weather and just boom. See ya.
Maybe. But anyway, Jazz is intriguing for sure. But Muncy is definitely the move there. Let's go to the outfield. Left field. Teoscar versus Verdugo. Teoscar's been pretty awesome. He has had some huge swings. Yes, he struck out a good amount. Verdugo is... He can put the ball in play when you need him to, and there is value to that in the postseason for sure. We saw that on multiple occasions, for sure. But there's just simply zero impact whatsoever. Now, it doesn't matter. He's hitting ninth. He's playing solid defense in left. They don't need him to, but that's just the reality. And it's obviously, again, another funny contrast to Teo, where he can absolutely impact the ball, and sometimes he'll strike out too much.
Verdugo is filling a role here, and that's okay. Yeah. Look, if he was hitting second and was an important piece for the next 10 years of Yankee baseball, like, yeah. But right now, his job is to not get out and play great left field defense in one of the bigger left fields in the league in Yankee Stadium. And he's done that. And it hasn't always been pretty. I would rather have Teoscar Hernandez. Both of these guys are free agents at the end of the year. Remember, Teoscar, home run derby winner, big smile, signed a one-year deal with the Dodgers. And it, at the time, it felt like, this is superfluous. They don't need this guy also. And they have. And he has been vital for them to give that lineup depth and sneaky fun World Series MVP
pick. Oh, yeah. No, I love Teo. He's the best. And then the last thing on Verdugo is team that drafted him, right? Obviously, you have a couple versions of these here with players against their former teams or some version of that. But this is a fun one.
Not just the team that drafted him. The team that traded him away for Mookie Betts. Now look, yes. Who would you rather have? Mookie Betts or Alex Verdugo? Don't need to answer that question. However, I guarantee you in Alex Verdugo's mind, he's like, I got to prove him wrong. Now, does that mean he's going to start swinging at everything outside the zone? Maybe.
Hopefully not for the Yankees.
Hopefully not.
But we will see. Center field. I mean, this is the part where we should at least acknowledge that this is probably where Kike Hernandez will be playing if he's not playing third. We need to mention him because he is inexplicably unbelievable in October. Otherwise, it's rookie Andy Pages. It doesn't matter. Aaron Judge is playing center field. I think the fact that Aaron Judge is an everyday center fielder is still something we probably should not take for granted and has enabled a lot of what the Yankees have been able to do. But not a great
long-term plan?
No, definitely not. But if it gets through this season and they win the World Series, no one will care. Is he great out there? He's fine. I know he's robbed some home runs, but coming in on balls is not easy for him. And again, the range is limited. Who cares? Whatever. He can fake it, and he's Aaron Judge. So
it takes a while to start a U-Haul. Okay. Simple as.
Yeah.
I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. The tall guy can rob home runs. Incredible. I think you're passing over Kike a little bit too easy here. You will notice this when you are here for game one. If we're ranking Dodgers that people care about here, he is behind Shohei and Mookie. I genuinely believe this. And now granted, I've been at one Dodgers game this year and it was this week. I am aware of this. I think the fan base cares more about like Kike than Freddie. Like Kike is a big freaking deal here. And part of that is because he's been here for so long and he's got a big personality and he's cute. Like all of that is true. But you'll see. Like Kike matters here in a really significant way. Before Dodger games, they do really cringy in-game entertainment stuff where they interview fans and like ask who the player of the game is going to be. And everyone says Kike. Like it's like, who's going to be good today? Kike. Oh my God, he's the best. Yeah. So just, would I rather have Aaron Judge? Yeah. Kike is a character in this for sure.
100%.
Right field. Aaron Judge. Come on, Jake. Right field, Juan Soto, Mookie Betts. We already talked about the two of them. Jordan, who's better?
I mean, it's funny. We go through all of these and we're like, oh, yeah, it's obviously that guy. Oh, it's obviously that guy. Oh, yeah. I mean, who do I want right now?
Soto.
I think it's Soto. It has to be Soto. But like... You want to tell me Mookie, what am I going to? Obviously, Mookie's the way better defender in right field with all due respect to Juan Soto's gold glove finalist. Second time, I believe, as a gold glove finalist in right field. Maybe he's not as bad as we think, but he's certainly not as good as Mookie. But how many other right fielders are you picking over him? Zero. But he's one of them.
Quick he's Soto the thing. One. The other day on my way out here, Jordan, I got stuck in traffic on my way to JFK, to the airport. And when you're running behind in a travel situation, everything in your life feels more stressful, right? Like when you're going to the gate, it's like you drop your phone and it feels like it's the end of the world. And then like you're banging into the wall and then you're just, everything's frazzled. That's what facing Juan Soto is like. Okay. He makes your life as a pitcher more stressful because when he's coming up, you're thinking about him, yep. You know, like he is just omnipresent in a way that makes your life worse if you're facing him. And so I think that's why I would take him over at Mookie. Shohei and Giancarlo. We've talked about these two guys already. The thing about Shohei is that he's walking a ton because guys are afraid of him. And that makes Mookie really important. I think you take Shohei Ohtani here, even though Giancarlo has been amazing and is capable of wondrous things and is maybe the only person in the series who could hit a ball harder than Shohei, right?
Yeah,
I guess Judge. but I'll take Ohtani between these two.
Yeah. Again, like Stan's unbelievable. I think Ohtani is still capable of getting fooled in a way that like Soto even isn't really, or at least not to the same degree. We've seen Ohtani have bad swings and bad at-bats, but on the whole, he will still work the count and will still draw walks in a way that Stanton just isn't right now. So
yeah.
I think that that's fair.
Starting pitching. What do we know? Yamamoto is probably going to throw game two. Okay? Because I believe that would give Yamamoto an extra day of rest that he would want.
Oh, coming off the last series.
Now, again, I'm not going to just do these in order because that's information we'll get before the series starts. But the starting pitchers for the Dodgers are Jack Flaherty, acquired from Detroit at the deadline. The Yankees tried to trade for him, didn't like the medical. Good for the Dodgers down the stretch. Incredible start against the Mets in the first outing. Poo-poo ka-choo against them in the second outing. He's going to start one of these games, two of these games, and the series goes deep. Yamamoto, talked about him before. Walker Buehler, one of the most important pitchers for the Dodgers. He's their ace in 2020, starts game one of every meeting of all the playoff series he can, finishes fourth in the Cy Young in 2021, gets hurt, not the same, comes back this year, pretty rickety, looked good in a four-inning start against the Mets, would have thrown game seven. Very excited to see what he has down the stretch. And then the last starter for the Dodgers is bullpen game, a.k.a. a la De Armas. Let's talk about this now. We got some unbelievable emails when we asked for alternative names to Jonathan Holstaff as a way to describe a bullpen game. But the best was a la De Armas.
I mean,
so good.
I think this was from Dan, but he sent a couple ones that were truly
MT
outstanding.
Pen.
MT Pen. I liked Derek, your turn, Bo.
I bet you did.
All right, I'm done. Your turn.
A la De Armas is so good.
Yes.
The Dodgers will only have to do a la De Armas once in this series because they'll have those.
Yeah.
Probably. Like, they did it twice against the Mets. They lost the first one, right?
Yeah.
And that's why they lost the first one. They figured it out the second time around because the offense scored enough runs. But at the end of the day, their starting pitching is not as good as the Yankees, at least on paper. We said the same thing again for them against the Mets, and the Mets' arms ran out of juice. I don't feel that will happen to the Yankees because they've had more time off and because their road to get to this point has been less exhausting.
Right. No, I agree with you. But it also is a reminder of how much harder. This is not the Yankees had an easy path. However, getting the Royals and Guardians out is easier than getting the Dodgers out. That is a fact. I do not feel bad saying that into a microphone that people will listen to. And so,
Lane Thomas is going to burn your house down and slash your tires.
And so that is the equalizing factor here, even though on talent and availability and rest, you absolutely take the Yankees pitchers.
And those Yankees pitchers are Gerrit Cole in game one and again, eventually, probably, Carlos Rodon, friend of the show. I can't wait to be nervous next to you watching him start a World Series game. Clark Schmidt, And then if they don't run Cole back for 147, it'll be Luis Hill or maybe Nestor Cortes Jr., who looks like he might be coming back. I'll take that Yankees group.
Not going to be Marcus Stroman.
That's for sure.
That is, he was added to the roster last round and did not throw a single pitch. So it does not seem like he's someone they want to be giving the ball, whereas Cortes, you could see getting some real run.
Now, these two bullpens, very interesting comparison between these two. As far as usage patterns are concerned, the Dodgers' pen has thrown more innings than the Yankees, right? A lot of those innings belonged to Brent Honeywell. Yeah. Okay? The Yankees' high leverage guys have thrown more often and have been leaned on heavier. That's Luke Weaver, Clay Holmes, Kane Lee, I guess now Mark Leiter Jr.
Tim Hill. Yeah.
Where compared to the Dodgers guys, Dave Roberts kind of held his horses back early in that Mets series in a very interesting way, so that when he had to use them in game six, Trinan, Hudson, Evan Phillips, they hadn't been seen a ton by the Mets. And I think that was important.
Yeah. From a workload standpoint, Trinan's the only one that's like really thrown a ton of pitches or even close to as many as Weaver. The Dodgers just have more guys that they are willing to turn to in those leverage spots. Whereas the Yankees, it really is just those four or five, the Dodgers, Trinan, Kopech, Phillips, Bonda being their only lefty. Do they get Vesia back? Right. That's another one to keep an eye on. So they have Daniel Hudson, right? Another one who they clearly, who really didn't throw that much so far in this postseason. They have more guys that they're willing to go to in those last three innings. The order is a little bit TBD. It seems like Trinan is, he feels like more of the closer now than really anybody else. But to your point, you know, the Yankees, those few guys have arguably been worked even harder.
Manager.
By the way, I mean, who are we? Yeah, I think I still lean the Dodgers. I'm leaning the Dodgers.
I'm leaning the Dodgers because I don't trust Clay Holmes right now.
Yeah. And maybe it is that simple. Again, I'm so impressed with what the Yankees have been able to do. Like, and we've talked about how awesome Matt Blake is and all those things. And I stand by those, but I think I still lean the Dodgers slightly.
Now, the Dodgers having to cover a bullpen game at some point in this series will force Dave Roberts to deploy his relievers differently, right? We're comparing two very different types of bullpens based upon what their responsibilities are going to be. If the Dodgers had Tyler Glasnow healthy to start one of these other games, I think the Dodgers bullpen,
or one of their seven other starting pitchers
like that are injured. If they had like Emmett Sheehan or something, right? Like, it would be different because the Dodgers could use their bullpen very differently. That's not going to be the case. So Roberts is going to have to, like in game three, if they have to bullpen game four, he's going to have to hold certain people back in a game three, which is going to skew the way that these bullpens are thought about. And I just think that that is an important context here. Manager, fascinating contrast. Dave Roberts, stock way up this October, okay? He has made the right moves at the right time. A much maligned character, the manager of the Los Angeles Dodgers, who his track record in October is not particularly sparkling. He has not always been great with the bullpen, okay? But in this postseason, he has pulled the correct levers at the correct times, right? Aaron Boone for the Yankees. His superpower is toxic positivity. And as long as they keep winning, that's fine for everybody. These two guys are fascinating to me because these two jobs are unlike any of the other jobs. Managing the Dodgers or managing the Yankees, you are managing the press and the perception and protecting the mental health of your players to make sure that someone doesn't get Aaron Hicks'd. Not as much as you're managing, like, the bullpen, but that is a crucial component of it. And the way that Dave Roberts played everything during the Padres series by making himself the villain, he admitted after the fact that he's like, I have no problem with Manny Machado. I just wanted to get you guys to not talk about my players. And it worked, right? So who would I give the edge to? I'd give the edge to Dave Roberts just because he has been in the World Series before. And that being said, I like both of these guys for the jobs they're in.
Yeah, it's kind of, to me, it's kind of more related to the point I just made before. Not that Boone hasn't managed some stressful games against Cleveland over the last week and a half. I just think the Dodgers are going to push them into some really uncomfortable situations. And that's when it's really going to be tested. Now, the Yankees could do the same for the Dodgers, and it could be really difficult for both. That's what I expect. That's what I hope for as a neutral observer, that it gets really difficult for both teams. That's what is most entertaining. But yeah, I think, again, we always struggle with, you know, judging and assessing manager impact and manager quality. But I think I also go Robert slightly here.
Yeah. All right. Let's take a break. And when we get back, we'll say goodbye. Welcome back to the End Baseball Barbacast. Just very quickly, a couple specific batter pitcher matchups that are interesting. Mookie Betts 1-for-19 versus Carlos Rodon. Would you bench him in game two against Carlos?
You bat him seventh. That's way funnier than benching him.
And bat Kike second because he has 3 home runs off Carlos in 7 plate appearances.
Very possible. Anthony Rizzo absolutely owns Jack Flaherty. That's basically the worst that Flaherty has done against any hitter that he's faced like more than 20 times. 1476 OPS for Rizzo against Flaherty.
And that's from when Flaherty was really good in the NL Central. Sure.
Yes, very true. Gerrit Cole, very good against Teoscar Hernandez, pretty good against Shohei, not so good against Freddie Freeman or Kike. So Kike is going to be important in this one.
Freddie makes a lot of sense, right? You think about Gerrit Cole, the types of hitters he does poorly against. Lefties with a short bat path to the top of the zone. Yep. Stephen Kwan, even Josh Naylor, right? Mm-hmm. Freddie fits in that category.
So those are just a couple to keep an eye on. I do care. Those are like a small sample stat thing that I absolutely care about and believe. Like I once you get to a certain, not when it's 2 at-bats, but if it's like 20 or more, like I do take, you know, I do put stock in that.
And if you can explain it, right?
Yep.
It's like, okay, so what is Carlos trying to do to a right-handed hitter? He's trying to get that slider inside and the fastball up. And Kike is just trying to scoop that low pitch out to left. And so when it tracks, it makes more sense, right? Whereas if it's like, Alex Verdugo is 4-for-6 against Anthony Bonda, like I'm like,
how? That doesn't make any sense. Yeah, well said.
That's not true, by the way.
And then the last
he's
thing.
He's not 4-for-6 against Anthony Bonda.
Before we do our predictions is just to acknowledge what happened when these teams did play this season, which is, and one very important note, the Dodgers took 2 of 3 from the Yankees in the Bronx in the middle of June. We don't have to recap the whole thing, but the one thing to remember about this series, which I had completely forgotten about, is that this was the only series the whole year that Juan Soto did not play in. And that is because he left the game right before this series with left forearm tightness. And I remember everyone, we were freaking out. Oh my God. And remember, they had already dealt with like Tommy John with multiple of their position players. And it's like, what is going on? Is Juan Soto going to, like, this is all terrible. Now that turned out to be nothing, but what it did give us, one, Juan Soto did not play against the Dodgers this year, but two, it also gave us the Trent Grisham home run against Tyler Glasnow on Sunday Night Baseball when the fans were chanting, we want Soto. Soto was on the bench resting his forearm tightness, and Trent Grisham hitting 082 went up there and blasted a go-ahead home run off of Tyler Glasnow when Glasnow had been dominating over the rest of that game. Obviously, we will not see Tyler Glasnow in this series. We probably not going to see Trent Grisham. He is really not playing, even though he has been on the roster. But other than that, you know, we saw Yamamoto, his best start of the year was that Friday night against the Yankees. He looked great. We saw Nestor. We saw Teoscar had a good series. But the Soto not having played there was an interesting thing to remember when I went back. This is also when Mookie's still playing shortstop. Shohei's batting second. You know, Jazz isn't there yet. LeMahieu's playing. We're not going to see him, obviously, in this series. Stanton was 0-for-14 with 7 strikeouts in those 3 games. So all those things are just will definitely be mentioned during this series and I think are worth remembering.
Let's predict. Now, predicting is dumb because what do we know, right? I want to look at this first through the lens of what do we want?
Okay.
Right? What are we hoping to see from this? And for me, it's with all due respect to Tommy Edwin.
With no respect to Tommy Edwin.
I've been watching too much Edwin Diaz. With all due respect to Tommy Edmund, I want the stars to shine. Mm-hmm. I want the World Series MVP to be Judge Soto, Stanton, Ohtani, Betts, Freeman, Garrett Cole.
Yeah.
If Will Smith wins World Series MVP,
yeah,
I might as well have just watched Diamondbacks Rangers again. I'm kidding.
But the thing is again, yes, only one player can win World Series MVP, and maybe it's the guy that just happens to have the most RBIs. Same time. I mean, like, just we can't. There's no boring outcome here. Like, someone has to do something. There's gonna be if one of these main characters is horrible, that will be interesting too. I'm not rooting for that, but like all of these the outcomes here, we're just guaranteed something truly fascinating. So, what do we want? Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I think it would be really cool to see Juan Soto raise the price of the brick even further.
Yeah. I, as a selfish person, I want this. I want seven.
Yeah.
Or I want five games, right? Seven because I would prefer seven. Like, this deserves seven. I want this to go the distance. I want us to talk about this for a long time. I want to be able to brag to people for years that I was at all seven of these, you know? Like, that's what I want. I want this to go down in history as one of the ones that stands the test of time. And if not that, then I don't want to fly back to Los Angeles.
Right. Yes, I can tell everybody that is what most of the media is thinking. But you not don't us. Care about that. And not us.
Not us. No, but that's the thing. It's like, yeah, there are media members who would prefer 5-7.
Sure. Yeah. That is an unfortunately large percentage. And but we do not fall into that.
Jake Jordan, give us 7. Yes, give me 7. Give me chaos. Give me bedlam. Give me counter punches. Give me Aaron Judge just quieting Los Angeles. Give me Shohei Ohtani.
Give me Oswaldo Cabrera pinch hit walk off home run. You know,
don't give me that.
What are you talking about? I didn't say like, you know, push bunt error single in the top.
No,
of
give
the
me that.
10th. No. Anyway, prediction. Do it. You first.
Yankees in seven. I just think Garrett Cole is going to do it. Whenever the rubber has met the road and he's really had to do the thing as a Yankee, he's done the thing. I think he will be dominant in game one, bad in game four, and dominant in game seven. I think this will be the Garrett Cole series. I think he will win the MVP. And I think the Yankees will raise the trophy and have their 28th ring. And producer Andrew Hartz and his fellow Yankees fans will be unbearable. And it will be great. And I can't wait.
I'm going to go Dodgers in 7. I woke up after I watched the Yankees celebrate and after I knew they'd be facing the Dodgers thinking Yankees in 7. And now I just think Dodgers in 7, and I'll probably change my mind 55 more times before I get to Los Angeles. The way I put it to you both earlier, I feel like the Yankees floor is lower. The Yankees ceiling is higher. Their best version of them, as we have started to see, although I'm not even sure we've seen it yet, is, I think, higher because of the pitching, if you get the best version of those. But I also think that the flaws of the Yankees we still have seen during this month against teams that are a lot worse than the Dodgers. And I'm a little bit concerned about that. And when you talk about home field, I am still ultimately going to lean so slightly towards the Dodgers, but I don't feel good about it at all. The only thing I know is that even if this is 4 games, this is going to be a spectacle, and we cannot wait. So thank you to producer Andrew Hartz for making this long episode of Baseball Barbacast possible. Come on, you thought we were going to keep this World Series preview, maybe last year, but this World Series preview deserves another hour and a half. So we hope you enjoyed it, and you can email us at baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. We are planning to have one more pod before game one, but this really serves as our real preview.
This meal is like breakfast. You know, you haven't eaten, right? You got time to chew on this. We're giving this to you Wednesday morning, all right? If one pod's going to go long, it's the Yankees-Dodgers World Series preview. No apologies at all. Very quickly, I just want to – I know we've talked too much about Brent Honeywell, who is our pal and someone who means a lot to us. Jordan, today, this morning, you sent me a tweet. And I just want to finish with this. This is a tweet from 2019. This is when you were covering
the NLDS between the Nationals and the Dodgers.
And I was covering the NLDS between the Twins and the Yankees. Yes. And as a dumb bit, this is when Brent Honeywell was rehabbing his elbow for one of the times. And I tweeted a picture of me FaceTiming with Brent in front of Yankee Stadium with the caption, Brent Honeywell's Yankee Stadium debut. And then under it, while you were in LA on the same night, you tweeted Brent Honeywell's Dodgers Stadium debut. And that to now that we're like still doing this and now Brent is here, it's so cool, dude. It's so great.
He is the best. If you haven't seen the interview that he did during the celebration, we're just so happy for him. So Brent, happy Honey Day whenever it comes next. Thank you all for listening, and we'll talk to you all again later this week.